and her mother-in-law, and the little one.
Testing, testing.
And I saw
do we have audio here?
They went to Buffalo and they didn't go see Peter and Masha. You know, what's going on here? And so I had to call her and find out. The reason they went was to get a new passport.
And they never found the other one?
Christy's really good at throwing stuff out. You know, and she may have put it in the garbage somewhere, the little one. And, you know, out it went without.
One day I walk outside and there's a company taking
there we go.
Yeah,
there
I
we
just
go.
Didn't love
when you look like your passport, it's time to go home.
So I called. Yeah.
I don't know what they do with kids' pictures. They change them.
The passports, yeah, they expire quicker.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
So,
until a certain age. There's a certain age at which they extend
them.
Yeah,
they do. It's 5 years or something
for the kids. Yeah. I think they don't see
the age. Okay.
So when we ended up buying
everything looks like it's up and running.
You can manipulate it every which way.
And I said, I'm not paying because I
yeah, I landed like that. Right there.
Come down.
Yeah.
We're not going to pay.
That's
quick
kind of
look.
Like
quick look.
Ago, and it didn't really bother me the first time. But if you need a wrist guard,
did I hit the button?
I jammed my wrist.
Nope, haven't hit the
Leon grabbed it with the leash and pulled it over backwards. And,
okay, one last thing.
A year.
So every time she'd come after me, I would leave my clothes over the wall.
Hey, we can get started if people are interested. Or we could break into separate decision groups and okay, we'll do that. Welcome, one and all, to the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, here to help you with any of your tech issues. Also to make some jokes and share some news. And as always, I've brought some topics of my own, and I'm interested in hearing what you guys have brought. And we can just get started. If there's any questions or topics people want to share, let me know. Anything out there?
I have an experience.
Sure. Ray, go ahead.
I have a relatively new Dell
computer.
Laptop?
Yeah. And I got a notice and Dell wanted to update. So I said, fine. Yeah. And after it updated, I couldn't get into Office or any of its adjuncts Word. So Sonny took care of it. God bless her.
Did you get an answer for what the issue was?
No.
Okay. Hey, do you know if it was a Windows update or a Dell specific?
It was a Dell update. Hmm. Dell specific. The only thing I could think of is the Sony. I don't know. For some reason, Office wasn't complete when I got it and got down to her and then found out. So she put in Word for me.
Okay.
And I think because it was a communal Word versus a personal Word.
Oh,
that may have been.
Yeah, maybe it has to do with what version of Office you're using.
I'm not sure. The computer's a year old.
I have an antique 2007 that's no longer supported.
Office 2007?
Office 2007. Everything still works except send mail some days. I was in love with 2007 until I got 365. Yeah, 365 is so much of an advantage.
Yeah, I think it's pretty well thought out. I don't get an opportunity to use the Office package as often as when I'm working a contract with a corporation that uses it. I use a lot of the free software. But
I have it because I have thousands of folders dating back to ancient history.
Yeah, isn't that the truth with this stuff now? Is it's
a lot of it offline. So it's my official storage thing on the computer. I take any emails I think I might want in the future, or even personal, stuff. Okay, if I buy something, I keep track of what I bought. They send me, okay, you're shipping, so if I buy it again, I have it.
Yeah, everything's...
And it's in multiple PST folders, so that you...
What I found, I had a lot of saved messages and in different versions of Office, like 2003 and all of those. What I found is that the 2007 would not open some of those older ones, but with the 365, it'll open everything. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and that was a big advantage.
Yes, because 2003, the old PST files have a different format than the new PST files, and you can convert them if you do so.
Oh, so are you saying that if you had PST files from for example, 2007, and you tried to open them in 2011, you'd have problems?
Well,
but in
2007 wouldn't open up.
So it would be like files from 2003 that won't open in 2007.
But we'll open in 365.
But we'll open in 365. That's good to know.
I have an additional problem. My daughter and I have been talking to each other on about a website. I've been doing it for her. But she sent me a PDF, and it comes in with missing fonts on my Apple.
Okay.
But I can open it on the other, on the
Windows 7.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it won't. That computer won't print. So.
Well, I know that to add to your stress, the only way the fonts are going to open correctly is if they're available for install in the Macintosh.
So where do I go to find out?
Ah, boy, I know exactly what to do in a Windows environment, but on a Mac, I haven't tried to put additional fonts into a Mac. Let's do a quick Google search to see how to add fonts to Mac OS. And internet is flying here at Tequila's again.
Yay.
How to install fonts on Macintosh. You know, I think you should just do that Google search because it's got a YouTube video here that'll walk you through how to find fonts and add them to you. And
well,
so,
how do you know what fonts they are? Because
it says missing fonts. Doesn't it give you a... it doesn't say the...
missing fonts.
Oh, it doesn't say which fonts are missing?
No.
How to find missing fonts in PDF. This is the Google Club.
That's annoying.
Identify missing fonts from PDF. She could reform the PDF and make it and force it to include the fonts.
My daughter?
I could rebuild the PDF and force it to include the fonts.
For a small fee.
How to determine font name in PDF. How to find missing fonts. How to remove embedded fonts from a PDF. They're not embedded. Find and fix missing fonts in PDFs.
That's what it is. She forgot to embed them, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Not that she should know that she needs to do that. I would just... hope when you built PDFs, they would do that by default.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But, you know, there are options when you do files like that to make them smaller, and that's by excluding things like fonts and relying on the host computer to provide the fonts. Mm-hmm. So you either provide it in the document gets bigger and bigger and bigger, or you provide a skeletal document and rely on all the resources being on the other end. And that's what's happened with this document. But I don't know.
Is there any way I can take it from my the Windows program and do something with it there. And then
you know what you could do? Yeah, you could. You could take the Windows program. I'm glad you asked that because I wasn't thinking in that frame of mind. But you could take it, that Windows program, open up the PDF, and then print it as a PDF.
Well, that's what I was trying to do.
No,
print it as a PDF.
As a PDF. You'll create a new document, a new PDF document. That PDF document should have all the fonts, and you should be able to move that over to the Macintosh and print it.
You should.
Should.
Okay.
It
says here.
It says here. It should.
Well, I'll let you know next fall
because we're leaving. Well, I would try that. I would expect it to work. I expect to be able to move PDFs. What happens when you end up in these situations is that people are trying to make smaller PDFs, and so they've checked some. They didn't mean to send it without the fonts. They just checked some options that they thought made sense, and now we're finding out they don't because you don't have any of those on the Macintosh side of things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But, and if it doesn't work, when you go to save it, I would look for options to embed PDF fonts. It would be in that process, that print PDF process. There would be a checkbox there, something about PDF fonts. I'm sorry, I can't just pull it out of my crevices of my memory, but I know it exists.
The next problem is that Windows 7 couldn't find the drivers from our brand new HP printer. Is that a typical thing, or
that could end up being a thing? If I mean, you said brand new HP printer.
Yeah,
Does it say on the side Windows 7 compatible?
I will go home and check it.
Yeah, because that has happened every iteration of Windows. They started rolling out equipment and not certifying it for previous versions. And printers have been one of the most complicated things throughout the generations of Windows. Every time a new version of Windows is released, a whole new slew of printer versions have come out for all the old printers so that they can exist in the new operating system. And if it's a brand new printer, there's a chance there is no driver for it on Windows 7.
Connected directly, and it still wasn't showing that there was a printer connected.
In fact, if there is a way to make it work, it's probably going to be not with a direct connection, but as a network printer share. So there's probably a generic driver, like a PDF driver or a PostScript driver out there that you could load and then access the printer as a network printer, but there may not be a USB driver for it. But I'd check the box. if it says Windows 10 compatible only, or if it doesn't say
it starts with Windows 10.
Yeah, if it says Windows 10 specifically, or it doesn't say something like Windows 7, 8, 10, then there's a good chance that they're not including a driver for Windows 7.
Mm-hmm. Should be able to find.
Interesting.
Printer at home that works with one computer but not the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing you could do is an HP. Mm-hmm. So you could go to HP.com and you could look up the printer, and in the driver download lookup, it will ask you which operating system you need it for. And if it doesn't list Windows 7, then you have your answer. If it only lists Windows 10, then you know it's not working on Windows 7. At least HP isn't supporting it on Windows 7. Yes.
This is why for 15 years I have not had a printer. But if you go to Staples or UPS stores, they're always a mile or two from your house. It's only pennies to get stuff done. Pennies.
A mile or two from your house.
You got to go there.
I appreciate that advice, Mike. When we're done, could you show me where the Kinko's is around here? It's only 1,000 miles away.
I've gone in and used Amanda's wireless printer on things.
Oh, okay.
When my printer wasn't working, so Amanda will do it. Right here in the paper store?
Oh, at the paperia here,
And in fact, I think I went to your place a couple of times. high school kid that would do that kind of stuff.
Right? I need, what we need is a better printer for that kind of activity,
yeah, okay,
because
yeah,
what you're describing is an awesome feature of new printers these days. They have really jumped over the whole desktop operating thing.
Right.
Because now you buy a brand new printer and it's assumed it's going to work on all your mobile devices, and you might have problems getting it installed in your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, you're shaking your head.
No.
Speaking of that, my iPhone always defaults to the printer now rather than to my home address.
So okay, it sounds like your printer probably
Superseding.
Yeah, well, it should.
Is taking over
on your phone. just disconnect from it when it's connected.
Yeah, I don't have to do it every time.
Well, then click on the info and choose the button forget, and then it'll forget that connection.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
But then, will I be able to print from the iPhone again?
Well, if the printer is connected to your home network correctly, you will be able to. If the printer is a wireless printer that's hooked to your home network and your phone is hooked to your home network, then you'll be able to wirelessly print to it.
However.
So what's your experience, Judy?
I got a new Canon down here.
Okay.
And because it was cheaper to buy a new one than to buy the ink. So mm-hmm. I bought a new one. So I had to call Canon, got a really nice guy in Mexico City, spoke great English, and he set it up. It's the same thing as before, though. I go to print something from my iPad. It says, no AirPrint printer
available. Okay.
Even though it is.
Oh, it is an air printer.
Yes, it is. But if I
did you get back to
Canon?
Did you go through any of that with Canon when he was working with you?
No, because he was just trying to get it installed. I mean, he just installed it like that.
And it's on the Wi-Fi network,
yes.
And yours is on the Wi-Fi
yes.
network.
And I can print wirelessly from this, but I can't. I have to save it as a PDF.
Okay.
I can't just print.
AirPlay should work, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So have you tried the Canon print?
Yes, and it won't even show if I'm trying. Like if I wanted to.
It won't
print,
show the printer in that list.
If I wanted to print an email.
Right.
I can't. I have to copy and paste it into a document, and then I can print it.
So in the iOS devices, you're looking for actually a print function, or you're looking for the share function.
Right.
And then when the share function comes up, you're looking to send a printer
mm-hmm.
or choosing a print app.
Right.
And you're not having any luck with any of that.
They don't show up.
They don't show up.
The Canon little logo to print doesn't show up.
Bonjour.
Did you try it in Spanish? Maybe.
maybe the Canon doesn't have bonjour running.
Maybe.
I'm just guessing.
Maybe.
It would be unusual. They're supposed to come.
I can wirelessly print from my laptop.
Yeah, your laptop's a Mac, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
they're
it's
all Macs.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
They are all Macs.
They're all Macs. Yeah.
So if I really want to print something like an email, I print it from my laptop.
I think you got to get a hold of Canon again.
I know.
Because it sounds like everything's the way it's supposed to be.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean,
and so now you need Canon to say, oh, yeah, we've been having that problem.
Right.
Download this update.
That's,
because it should just work.
Because it said right on the box, AirPrint.
Oh. My experience, the AirPrint printers have been awesome.
I'm going to take my old one, which is pretty new, back to Colorado and see what happens. They also gave me the model number to use to get the manual in English.
Oh, okay.
Instead of it being a 3010, which is what it is, it's a 3020. In the U.S., it's the same. So I'm going to go and see if the ink cartridges in the U.S. work.
Probably not.
Well, that's been our experience recently.
That's not what Canon says.
Yeah, and our experience has been with HP. I don't think it's been with Canon.
Okay.
So
we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, I have a Canon in the States, but I hadn't found a Canon ink down here.
Yeah, down here?
Yeah, they have Canon
here.
Ink. Yeah.
They have.
Well, and never forget Amazon, because Amazon
really
has everything.
Yeah,
for sure.
And ink is really expensive.
Is there a printer you can just plug in?
Well, that's kind of how I feel about these wireless. That's why I'm just a little disheartened by Judy's experience, because in my experience, I've had a number of experiences now where I took a printer, I plugged it in, and I could immediately start connecting wireless devices to it. And I didn't have to do any major setup. I just put in the ink, put in the paper, the device can find it. In fact, many of these printers now are using mobile apps to set themselves up on your network.
Yeah.
So before they even touch a desktop environment, they're already set up and ready to go.
Which ones?
Chester.
A question, and I can't remember this. I can't remember the name of the printer that doesn't use ink.
Are you talking about a laser jet printer?
Laser jet, with toner
cartridges? Yeah.
Does laser jet also print in color?
Yeah. They're quite a bit more expensive.
Not on the same machine, though.
But, wait, what do you mean?
I have a laser printer that's only in black and white.
You have to buy a color laser print to do it. That's hurtful.
They don't come automatically.
You could go country by country, couldn't you? I mean, you're not stuck with the problem with ink not being available.
You know, this ink not being available, or this geographically located ink, I'm waiting for it to fall apart. I've only heard about it, had people here telling me about it, anecdotally, about HP printers. Right. And I completely believe that it's happened, but I think it's happened very covertly. I don't think they haven't made it very clear, and I think they're going to, in my opinion, they're going to come back from it. They're going to pedal back from it.
Yeah, the other thing that was mentioned a minute ago, that it's cheaper to buy a printer than it is to buy ink.
Oh, yeah.
They've caught up with that, too. They only keep it just a
little bit. That is very true. Lots of the printers you buy now, brand new, come with these shallow ink cartridges.
Right.
Except Canon, I think. Canon comes with...
It's a real one.
Same as Gillette razors.
Yeah. Did you say that again?
Gillette razors, when they started off, razors were cheap, blades were expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Get it out there. Just get it out there.
Brother Printer makes a couple printers that come with huge ink
cartridges,
and they
come with huge.
When you buy the printer, it's a little bit more expensive, but it's a 2-year supply, in their opinion, of ink for somebody who prints quite often.
That's cool. And Epson did the same thing, right? They had these huge reservoirs. Yeah.
But the cartridge size is like 5 times normal, you know, as far as capacity making. And you can change them individually, so you don't have to change
all that's cool.
All the colors at once.
That's cool.
It's designed for lower ink.
Somebody called me about a printer problem just recently, and I had to have a sad conversation with them, going, look, there are so many parts in that printer that are not replaceable without paying almost half the price of the printer. My office just doesn't even deal with printers anymore. I don't want them to be disposable. I mean, I want them to be anything that we're working on. I want it to be coveted and worth repairing and have a repair. But they don't. They're like styrofoam cups now. It's really sad. And you can buy them real cheap. People ask me, what should I do for printers? Like, go to Walmart. They've got one there for 800 pesos.
Yeah.
it's like that's cheaper than the ink. The printer itself is cheaper than the ink.
But you got to buy the ink to go with it.
Sure. At some point, you're going to be buying
it.
You
just could buy a new one.
Yeah. Throw it away and buy another one.
All right. Do you just throw them away, or is there a better way to dispose of them?
Well, you hand them off to an unsuspecting person that doesn't understand it's more expensive to get a printer without ink. It's like they thank you for the gift as you were so nice even to drive it over to their house.
Last week, I went into Walmart and bought a colored ink for my HP printer, and I got 10 documents out of it. Now I'm out of color.
Happens with me with my Epson.
You really want to use the right equipment for the right job. Are you printing pictures?
Yes.
Yes. That would be the reason that you suck through ink so quickly. And you'd really want to, if you were a professional photographer, you'd want to have a professional printer.
Well, that would be an HP. Yeah. I have one of those, and it's a Canon.
Yeah.
But it takes $180 worth of 8 cartridges to make it work.
See, my mom's the same way. She's got a huge, just almost poster size photo printer.
And it will.
Yeah, and but that print had to have cost her $20, $30 to get of ink to get it out like that, like a professional.
I only would do portraits with that.
Yeah.
Something that's going up for 100 years.
You go into my house, and all our pictures and portraits are all work that my mom's done and printed out and given to us as gifts.
Nice. Yeah.
They won't fade? Yeah.
We got a question over here.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
A little different question.
Sure.
Some friends of mine are kind of new to this game. A Fire Stick is one. A Roku is one. What are those things called?
Streaming.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like a streaming box or a streaming stick.
Does Google have one that they use?
Yeah, Chrome.
Well, it's the Chromecast, but
they use Chromecast.
It's tough to put it in the same
same
class.
These guys came down with one, and we're getting ball games and stuff on Hulu through their through their cell phone company, which is T-Mobile, and it was free. So, and then all of a sudden, it came up on the screen that their machine was too old, wouldn't work anymore. So I said, take it over to your place and see if there's any updates available to bring down to it.
What streaming stick was it?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we just have to look at it and see if there's...
Well, it's possible that could be a solution.
A firmware update, yeah, or even an app update if there's a specific app they're trying to use.
Okay,
oh,
okay.
Yeah.
You should be able to go into settings and find an update.
Yeah, if you're using a mainstream device like a Fire Stick or a Roku, updating should just be a very natural thing. It should happen easily.
Okay.
Yeah. It would have to be like some knockoff Chinese box that, or some problem with a Google account that is caused.
Still going to suggest I go to your place.
Okay.
Speaking of Chinese, there's an article in the today's Boston Globe about a startup company that is streamlining the copyright process in China for American companies.
What? Say that again?
The Boston Globe today, the business section, has an article about a startup company that is going to China and streamlining American product copyright protection in China. And they've made some progress in the last 2 years. In fact, one number was 800 million in copyright fees coming from China to the United States a couple years ago, and then last year was like 1.2 trillion.
Jeez.
It's an interesting article. Boston Globe business section and Chinese copyright. Actually, I can send you the link if you want to put it up.
Sure, yeah, that would be cool.
It's not a long article. It's a really interesting article.
What you're talking about is there's.
It costs $25,000 to $30,000 to get. No, I'm sorry, $50,000 to get a copyright in China, and 2/3 of that is the translation cost.
Right.
So these guys figure they can go in and streamline this thing, and cut that translation thing like by 2/3 itself. So they could knock this down to maybe $20,000 instead of $50,000.
And I would need that for what? I would need that.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, this is an international business thing that's going on. If, you know, if you were still working and you invented something that you wanted to copyright and sell in China, you would use these guys to do that.
Yeah, maybe
that's
this...
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, maybe this ends up being an indicator of how copyright protections are... there's a system in place to honor copyright protections
and
in China.
Maybe it would go over as far as Pandora and Netflix, wouldn't it?
I do not know. It just seems like there's such a gray market in China building knockoff stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, I thought of something. Have people noticed all the articles on USB drive interface on Windows 10 has now changed the default to not caching?
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Basically, what this means, if you're backing up to like a USB attached hard drive,
well, maybe start with
much slower now, unless you change the default back to where you have to say, I'm going to disconnect the U.S. device and I'm going to just rip it out.
Well, what I was going to say is, I mean, you've all had the experience of pulling out a device and having it say it wasn't ejected properly.
Right.
And
no longer the default.
And so the default now is that the mode that USB drive is inserted is in a fast removal mode. So,
which means they are not caching, which means if you're doing backup to a USB device, it'll run much slower.
Well, the instance of backing up will run slower.
I'm kind of confused because just this last week I backed up my whole computer onto an external hard drive, and it went real fast.
Yeah, I don't think you'll notice the difference between caching and not caching to a USB drive. It's really that initial. When you look through the file allocation table, when you've got nothing's staying open.
Well, cache should basically, back in old days where this really rotated.
Yeah.
They're supposed to wait for the rotation to get the write back verify that says it was correctly done, and then before they do the next one, and that's what cache does. It doesn't.
But
use that wait.
But in this, what they're doing is they're allowing files to stay open in memory that are attached to files on the disk, and they've stopped that now.
No, they stopped caching.
Yeah.
All writes to the disk are no longer cached.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So these files are already they're being terminated instead of being kept open. Well, right, I understand that. But the point being that you can remove the USB drive without worrying about damaging any of the files.
Correct. Oh, okay. That's the good side of it.
And that's the point. The point is that you don't have to go through an eject function.
Right. The bad part is it runs slower.
Yeah, but I don't believe you're really going to see that. I mean, I just in the
if
experience
you're
doing a
backup of that takes an hour to your offline hard drive, we'll see it.
Yeah, maybe.
I have a question, though, with regard to that, if I may.
You know what the distinction is here, if I could follow this through, is you're talking about doing a manual backup where you sit down and you drag things over. And I'm really thinking of a Windows 10 backup where you've got a hard drive plugged in and you're doing your work and it's backing up in the background.
And you don't care a lot.
And then it's not going to have any effect on your backup
procedure.
Yeah, if you're doing
your backup before you go on vacation, because you want...
When I do the backup,
A manual backup.
Backup. It changes the dates. And you can't tell how old the particular file is because it changes to the current date.
Yeah.
We'd like to figure out how not to do that.
Well, you could use a copy program or a command line. I mean, I wouldn't talk you into doing a command line copy just because it's archaic. But there is a way to copy it with its original dates. And so there are some copy programs out there that's an option And the only one I can think of right now is RoboCopy. I think it's called RoboCopy. It was a Microsoft project. Let me see if I've still got a copy of it here. RoboCopy.
Do you have that problem?
Oh, everybody has that problem.
It's depending upon how I use it.
Chester, that's just the way copying a file works. When you copy it to a new source, it's got a new date on it.
And you
the creation date.
And you try to line it up by sorting by the original date, and it won't do that either.
Well, because they all have the same date.
They all have the same date?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I see for something I want to retrieve, I use file history, which is making backups all the time for you.
That's
probably what I'm doing. Oh, wow. RoboCopy exists now in a command line form. I mean, I guess if you need that. RoboCopy GUI. Powerful tool. I think this is it. RoboCopy in Windows with RoboCopy GUI. You know what? That's what it is. I guess the product now is called RoboCopy GUI, GUI, And the reason I'm mentioning it is because you can do those kinds of things. Is you can specify, I want files from this directory to go to this directory. And then you can specify things like skip if it already exists, replace if this one's newer, keep the original dates. Those are all like check mark options on the copy process. And so in that way you can say you have 1,000 files you want to move. And
10,000.
Yeah, 10,000 files, and you know 2,500 of them already exist in the location. Then you can tailor your copy procedure to go, okay, well, if that's already there, don't copy it. If it's already there, but it's got an older date, go ahead and copy it, things like that.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Yeah, Google RoboCopy GUI, and I will probably be doing the same because I did look for this recently. I'm remembering that I saw that it was on the command line. It was a side project of Windows. It was one of those things that these Microsoft developers just, I need a tool, and they built it. And it became so popular internally that they made it for free available on one of their blog posts. And amongst Windows users like myself, the application got so popular that everybody was passing around this blog post. Microsoft finally integrated it right into the Windows operating system. But they did it at the most minimal level. It was for developers by developers, when like normal people could really take advantage of it. And so I think that's what this RoboCopy GUI is. It's not the copy, it's the graphic interface to the copy. I'm gonna look it up and understand it better for next meeting. Anybody else got topics? I came with a bunch of silly topics.
Did you look at that browser deal?
I am familiar with Brave. I didn't get a chance to read the article before the meeting, but I liked the headline.
It's, yeah, I did too.
Like 200% faster, is that what it was saying, than the Chrome browser?
Well, No ads.
Brave is cool.
Yeah.
Works great.
Brave has made a name for itself for being safe, private-oriented.
What is it? Brave? What is it? The browser?
You would use it instead of Chrome? Instead of Chrome or Internet Explorer or.
And it syncs all your devices. If you're running Brave, put it on your Android phone or your Apple, and they'll all sync all your favorites.
I haven't spent a lot of time playing around with it, but I know its notoriety is because it's a private, secure browser. That's what it's getting known for.
You pay for it? Free.
It's free. And it's built out of the same engine that Chrome is built out of.
But why is it free?
Why not?
Well, almost all of them are free.
Well, what's it stealing?
That's the question.
Yeah, at some point there's going to be a monetization. What I know about Brave is that it's being billed as a secure private browser. So the developers of it probably have some other side business that's a part of. I mean, they might have a computer securities business that they're trying to do, and this browser's an add-on to it. A little bit of research will find out what's going on. But
it says Brave by Adblocker.
So it's the ad blocker company. They've built a version of Chrome by them to be a secure browser. So what'll probably happen is, Google's already done this. What will probably happen is only the sanctioned ads will be allowed to come through the browser because it's owned by ad blocker. I'm speculating, but it wouldn't surprise me at all that if Brave got popular enough, then you could approach Brave and say, I want my ad to appear in the search results, and you would pay Brave, and that ad would appear. And Google's already doing this with Chrome. They've dipped into it real slowly, but their Chrome browser already has the ability to strip out other people's ads and leave only their ads in your search queries.
Why do I get so much from Chico's?
The girls get that.
It says Brave is built by a team of privacy, focused, performance oriented pioneers, including the inventor of JavaScript and the co-founder of Mozilla.
Yep.
So it's nothing about Adblocker.
Well, they're privacy oriented.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. They'll tell you everything.
They've got to be something somewhere.
Well, why don't you try it? Jesus, put in as it is to take out.
Well, in some of these things, I don't know if this is true about Brave, but what is true about software development houses is that they give their developers time to work on side projects, and they rely a lot on open source projects to stimulate what they're working on. So anytime one of their developers is working on an open source project, there's meat there that they can bring back to the business. It may be hard to see how it brings value, but it's bringing value somewhere. Brave.
Is it faster?
Good question. Firefox is really fast these days. I don't know if anybody's gone back to using Firefox.
I do. But I never went away from it.
Yeah, is it slower than Brave?
Yes.
Well, the headline that I think Ed sent me was 200 times faster than Chrome, which is not hard to imagine because
no.
Chrome is just sucking so much memory right now.
I'm sorry?
Can you sync your favorites into
you can sync your favorites through all your devices.
Oh, okay.
So you transfer to
Brave. Yes.
When you transfer to Brave, it'll pick up your favorites that's already on your computer through your Google account.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you tell it whether you want to import your favorites through Google or Explorer or Firefox, all the options. Once you import them, you go into Brave Sync and you put another browser in your phone, Android, and you tell it to sync it to that one.
Does it use a QR code?
I'm sorry?
Does it use a QR code?
It has a QR code, and it also has a text code.
That you can type.
If you don't have a camera that works, you can use the text code.
Cool. Yeah, this syncing of browsers is the latest thing with browsers. All the browsers can do this now. If you think about Chrome, you can sign into your Chrome and a backup of your bookmarks and passwords and your history all go to the Google Cloud. And then if you sign into Chrome from your mobile phone, all that stuff comes down to your mobile phone. Sign into the computer in the back bedroom, all that stuff comes to that Chrome on the back. Firefox is doing the same thing. You've got a Firefox account that will sync everything. Opera's got the same thing, a way to sync across all of them. So this is you should be expecting this out of any of these browsers. Now, Microsoft Edge, if you've been reading the news, Edge is going to turn into a Chrome-based browser. So I think we're going to be left with only two unique tools for doing the same job, and everything's going to be based off of one of those unique tools, which is Chromium. And the Chromium engine is all controlled by Google. It's a Google open source project, is Chromium. So the majority of how we access the internet will be done through a motor that was built by Google. even if it says Microsoft on it.
Dave. Reminded me. Has anyone observed, like in my case, Quicken, when it does the initial open, seems to have slowed down drastically in the last month? Once it gets running, it's fine.
I haven't run Quicken at all.
I haven't had that problem.
But then I have tons of history in Quicken also.
Is this the online version?
No, yeah. One on your desktop.
So this is like a Quicken 2007.
It's trying to sync something or do something at an initiation.
Maybe it's an update it's trying to get.
No, because it does it repetitively.
Well, if it's not getting the update, it would probably do it repetitively. It would probably try again, right?
Yeah.
Mine does not automatically get the internet. I have to put in where I want to go get my. I use Schwab, and so I have to put in my Schwab password in order to get
Do you have it picking up data from bank accounts?
See, I have it deliberately not trying to pick up. And yet it acts like maybe it is trying to.
Have you double checked it?
Yeah.
Like you've double checked to make sure that it doesn't have any settings that are right. Going out there, or it's not trying to go grab an update. Well, then you might be looking at just Windows stuff. You might like scan the hard disk for problems. I had an interesting problem after this last big Windows update. I finally ended up with 1809 in this laptop. This is a couple of weeks ago. And what I noticed, and I hadn't been mentioning here, and I had just been ignoring until I could get a chance to get to it, is that if I restarted the computer, it would hit a black screen and just sit forever. This is Windows 10. Restart the computer. Shows Asus, the logo from the manufacturer. Shows the Windows logo. Shows the spinning balls. Spinning balls go away. Black screen. And then it's black screen. And black screen. And black screen. And if you shake the mouse, you can see the mouse. But it's sitting on top of a black screen. And finally, it would come to the login prompt. And I could hit the, I could type in my login. The whole computer works just great, but it's that startup.
Sounds like an update that's not making
it. Well, it was completely updated. This actually came after the last update. And I've been ignoring it and finally decided to deal with it. The solution was to reinstall Windows, doing a reinstall repair. And from Windows, you can download onto a USB drive. And Microsoft's actually made it fairly simple. If you've got a USB drive that has over 16 gigs and nothing on it you care about, you can download this program from Microsoft that will build that USB drive as an installer, and you can immediately start it from Windows and run a reinstall repair. And I've done this to solve problems on a dozen computers now, and the results are phenomenal.
I do that once a year.
It is. Well, this has been one of the biggest chores. Apple has had this figured out for a long time, but Microsoft has only recently gotten this figured out. It used to be that you'd have to rebuild the whole computer, and then you'd have to re-update everything, and there'd be software that you'd have to reinstall because you had rolled back by doing this reinstall repair. Windows 8 didn't even have a reinstall repair. You just had to back up your data and flush the computer. So this is an amazingly powerful tool to be able to use. It loses power very quickly if you can't get into Windows. If you can't get into Windows, you might be looking at doing a reinstall. You might be looking at bringing it to my office, because at that point you really are trying to figure out how to save your data without copying over anything. So it's a bit more complicated. But if your computer is running and there's Windows things that are not running right, it's worked really well.
If you have a separate partition for your data, it's really nice.
Yeah.
It's so easy to do it, and it won't destroy anything except all the junk you've been accumulating that you don't want anyway.
Well, and this is the distinction I'm trying to make, is that with the old reinstall repair procedures that people like I would put together for Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows Vista, Windows XP, it was a procedure that you had to be very careful, or you might wipe out all your data. Or you might lose access to programs that you're not able to reinstall because you don't have the media to reinstall them. Whereas this reinstall repair that they've put together, and again, the idea is you're building a USB drive so you can install Windows. You've already got the code. If you bought your computer with Windows 8 or Windows 10, the code is in your computer, so you don't even have to think about the code. If you bought Windows 10 off the shelf, then you'll need the code that came with it. But there's a very good chance the code is in the cloud, because of when you installed it in your computer uploaded the code to the cloud, and the moment it goes to activate, it'll see that code already exists. So this is beautiful. In 90%, I mean, making up this statistic, but I'm assuming 90 to 95% of all cases, I mean, basically everyone here would not have to worry about keeping track of their code, because it's already in the cloud or it resides on your computer.
this USB drive that you make up, it walks you through making it. And now you can take this media, plug it into your computer, and do a reinstall repair. All your data stays right where it is. All your applications. I mean, again, you should be backing up stuff in case things blow up. But before, you were backing it up in case you made a mistake. Now you're backing it up in case the computer...
There's an option to save all your data.
Yeah. But this there's an option to save all your data if you're refreshing.
Right.
But if you're doing a repair, a reinstall repair, it leaves everything in place. It leaves the apps all in place, all your settings in place, leaves your data all in place. You should be backing up for peace of mind. If you follow what I mean, it's not, there's very little chance you're going to lose any of your data doing this kind of repair. And it solved the problem, that this slow startup problem. It's not actually a topic I brought with me. But I did bring some interesting stuff, if you guys are interested. We talked about Apple, how they've announced that they're going to put their apps on equipment. So Vizio, Sony, what was the other ones? LG. These are TV sets that are going to host the Apple TV app. Samsung. Samsung's going to host the Apple TV app. Those other TVs, they're all going to host AirPlay. And AirPlay is that system that's built into Apple devices that lets you stream from your device to the TV set. So you open up AirPlay, you're watching a YouTube video, and you open up AirPlay, and it sees your TV set, and you can select your TV set, and now it plays it on the TV set. Doesn't matter if YouTube's over there. The AirPlay's been around a long time, but if you're not into Apple products, you're not aware of it, because it only used to work with Apple devices and Apple TV. That was part of the big announcement that Apple made, not this last one, but the announcement before that, where they came out to say that all these lines of TV are going to support Apple Play. All right, did I say that right? There's too many AirPlay. Constant AirPlay. Thank you. At least it's too close and it's still wrong. But it's AirPlay, and I've got it written down right here in front of me. They're going to support AirPlay, which is amazing that now all of a sudden all these Apple devices can just stream right to any of these devices.
Do you think that my Vizio TV that's down here, that will actually show up on it?
No, absolutely not. You need to buy a new Vizio. There is a point to doing this stuff. There's absolutely nothing in my mind that makes me think that you're going to get an app. Well, you're definitely not going to get an app because they didn't announce an app for Vizio. But they would have to do a firmware update to that Vizio, and they would have to have hardware already in it that would support this new protocol. And I have trouble believing Vizio has any incentive to do any of that. They'll just be releasing it with the new TVs.
So a new TV.
But I mention all that because the new thing this week is that Netflix has announced they're pulling AirPlay out of their app on iOS devices.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, Netflix is convinced it can make your experience better by turning it off. And they've done it immediately. In fact, you should be able to go home and look at your Netflix app on your iPhone or your iPad and see that you're no longer able to use AirPlay to stream from your device to your TV set. Now, this is significant. A lot of people are like, well, my TV already has Netflix in it. But the AirPlay existed before Netflix existed on that particular TV. This is a very interesting thing that they've done. There's a lot of speculation on why they might have done it, but what they're telling people is that it's not supported because they can't give you the experience that they're expecting. Something about what Apple's doing with AirPlay recently is not allowing Netflix to collect metrics on the devices that you're watching their programming on.
And because they can't collect those metrics, they're turning it off. Now, I think they're selling this idea to us as like, well, if we don't know it's a Samsung model, then we can't lay out the menus correctly, and we can't show the what's recommended to you correctly. I'm sure in the end, this is what they're going to be telling you. But I think what it really is they're having in a pissing match with Apple right now, because Apple's going to compete directly with them, and so they're trying to create friction and disrupt the market. I don't think it's a smart way to do it, but I think it's directly related to what's going on with, because Apple is, I like that same TV that has a Netflix app that used to allow you to have this experience of browsing through your iDevice and go, you know what, I want to see that on a big TV right now. Yeah. Well, that's being taken away from you, right? But on that same TV, they're going to have an Apple app sitting right there to compete right against the Netflix app that's right there. I don't quite understand. It's going to come out. We'll figure out what's going on.
What's Disney going to do?
Yeah. Well, and yeah, Disney's coming in. You would think that Netflix would be like embracing every place they could put themselves. And instead, they're just taking features away from you. Well, I guess my topics aren't interested enough to keep the people here.
They are.
Let's talk about Bitcoin.
All right. Hey, I got one more before you guys get out of here. Have you been using USTV247.com?
No.
USTV247.com. I discovered it this morning. It's got great streams on it. I discovered it through a YouTube video that was showing people how to put a web browser on your Fire Stick so that you can get access to all these TV channels. It's an index of all these streams, like news streams, movie channel streams, and it works. It's got a really nice layout. And it's a blog post after blog post. It lays out Fox News, MSN, CNN. It lays out Fox TV, ABC TV. It lays out Star, HBO.
It's
USTV247.com. And it worked phenomenally. I started playing. The YouTube video I watched that was giving this advice was from January 26th. There's on this website, they've got very clear report copyright violations, so that if a copyright holder came along to the website and said, wait, they're violating copyright, they're violating my copyright, they have a whole procedure for saying this is not supposed to be on this site. It's been there since January, and stuff is still up, and it's working great. So I don't know how long it'll be around, but I can totally go to any of these cable channels. If you want the experience of flipping through channels that are running live, this has got those channels, and it worked great. So I'll put a link on our website to help the Google search engine to shut this down, but it'll also help you guys find it much quicker. And you can play with it if you're, I like right now we've got the bar thing going on, and that's like a constant stream. I brought it up, I had it in the background while I was working on Computer Club topics, and it was great video, great audio coming out of it. There's no ads that I had to get off the screen. There's no pop-ups coming up. It felt like a legitimate service. And it's free. Yeah. It was.
Can you use it with Apple Play?
I think you probably could, actually. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Is the one that competes with Avino or whatever it was that got shut down. That works under the law that says a nonprofit can legally rebroadcast anything. So if you have a local.
Like under a fair use doctrine, because it's a nonprofit.
So if you have a local presence in the city of the U.S., you can get all the local TV in that city.
Through an organization, through a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, a locast. Yeah.
Okay.
The one time I went up
to the city. It was working fine for me.
Turned around
okay,
the wrong way.
I get to the location and went into town. It accepts my location, shows the stuff, but then when I go to show it, it just kind of blinks out.
Close it.
It was working, you know.
Well, that may be what this does in a month or two.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen it at all. You said it was called Locast?
LOCAST.com.
I'll put it on my lookup list. Because I haven't looked at it at all. Well, I'll put that link to the how-to video that I was watching this morning. I'll put that on the website. But what the how-to video was somebody, and actually, I didn't know this YouTuber until I watched this video. This is a great video. It's definitely at this level. He's talking about watch any TV channel live that you might be interested in on your Fire Stick. And the first half of it is how to put a web browser on your Fire Stick. And so he goes through what the web, I mean, and it's the web browser that Amazon anoints as being an Amazon web browser. And all you have to do is get the web browser. A lot of these have a web browser already. If your Fire Stick doesn't have a web browser, here's how to put it on. And then after you got the web browser on, type in ustv247.com. And the layout is beautiful. I mean, it looks professional. It looks like a genuine service. They've got lists of top channels, and they've on the homepage, and you click on it, and it brings you to a page of that channel. It's got a description of what this channel's all about. You click a play button on that page like you were at a YouTube video, and after a few moments, the channel pops up streaming live. What I find is I've gotten so used to time slipping everything and like click and play that I find streaming TV really annoying these days. I don't want commercials, and I want to watch it whenever I want to watch it. And so,
you need DirecTV?
Yeah, when I found it, I'm like, well, this is a cute novelty, but I don't know if I'm going to get a lot of use out of it.
Wrong, Chester. You got too many commercials on DirecTV.
What's that?
You got too many commercials on DirecTV.
Well, I record everything, so I just pass through it.
I think if you're still a person, though, that has a channel, a stream just going off in the back room, this is perfect for it. If you're letting a news feed go 24/7, this is perfect for it.
The spelling is locast.org.
L-O-C-A-T.
C-I-S-T.
C-A-S-T. .org. I thought that's what I... Oh, org. Org is what I don't have.
Locast.
.org. .org.
Locast.org.
LOCAST.org. Okay. We'll check it out. Yeah, and check out that ustv247.com. Did you already bring it up?
Yeah. So I'll check it out when I get home.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed by it, but I suspect it'll be just a matter of time before everything is considered copyright violations and there's nothing left on the site.
Between Cody and YouTube, everything's there anyway.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing that really impressed me this morning was I was having a Cody experience from a website, except I didn't have the delay. Like here's a whole list of possible live channels, and I click. And on Cody, you click, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and finally something comes forward or it fails. Whereas with this, every time I clicked, I waited just momentarily, just for a moment, and I couldn't find anything that failed. Finally, I found something like ABC TV failed. But every other channel around there was working just fine. The other thing is I tried to bring it up on my web browser and my Samsung TV, and I couldn't get it to work. But I brought it up on my PC that's connected to my TV, and it worked just fine.
Same thing.
Yeah. As far as I was concerned, it was the same thing.
On my Android, probably should. It's got a browser in it.
You know, again, I only found it this morning. I didn't get a chance to check. I'll check it on my Android as well.
It came up on my tablet.
Were you able to start a stream without any issue?
I'm sorry?
Were you able to start a stream without any issue? Just click on one of them and see if it works.
Yeah,
Jennifer's going to call you.
Are you talking about the U.S.?
USTV 247.
I tried to open something and it just didn't open. But.
And while you guys do that, I'm going to shut down our meeting. Wow,
well, what do you mean, Neil? People already shut down.
Yeah, they're all gone except for you diehards that stay with me till the end.
Doc TV, I won't go home.
This is the end of our computer meeting, my friends. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next Tuesday. Same time, 9:15 here.
You'll turn out the lights.
Look at that. That's an amazing experience. Is that on an iDevice or an...
The answer to your question is yes. Mm-hmm.
So you got an Android tablet immediately, you got an iPhone immediately.
Sheesh.
It's I'm going home.
Yeah. I'm going home to TV. One of the things that I've really liked about Kodi is that for that click and watch experience, it's been good. You can find just about everything you want. You can watch it when you want to watch it. I have not appreciated the live TV experience in Kodi. It's always hit or miss. I mean, even when you find something that's good for live TV, you're sitting there waiting, wondering whether it's going to come up or whether it's going to fail. This website's one of the best experiences I've found so far. And I found it by accident.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I'll say, good day to you, sir. Let's shut down this meeting. We've been here at Tequila's. We're here every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15-ish. And we solve the tech problems of the day. If you're interested in any of this stuff, check us out at sccclub.org. If you've got computer issues and you're looking for a support network that can sympathize with you and resolve your issues, call my office at 226-0209 or look for us online at internationalcs.net. We're happy to help you with any of that stuff. We do hardware, software, programming, and websites. We do it all. Just get a hold of us, Scott at internationalcs.net. Until next time, y'all keep calm and tech on.
Have a homework assignment for you.
A homework assignment? Don't say that.
Yeah. Nasty word, isn't it?
So are you, from what I've read about this sandbox that Microsoft is adding to the next release?